This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1.
Hi, this is Dr. Bob Fetrakis bringing you The Other Side of the News, 98.3 WCRS 102.1, as well as our sister station, our eco-socialist feminist sister station, 94.1 WGRN. I'm in the studio with Mark Stansberry of the Community Organizing Center.
Yes, sir.
And an individual who knew the 13-year-old Tyree King, who was shot in the back, causing the recent controversy in the city of how the police should conduct themselves in the inner city. And Mark, before the show, I mentioned that statistically, for every one juvenile 13 to 17-year-old shot who's white, 31 black youths are shot by the police. Does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't. The fact that the use of the police force in the inner city or the urban setting is even beyond just getting shot. It's just the total occupation force mentality that's in there that you see kids spread-eagled on the ground almost every day because a police officer wanted to stop them and is frightened or whatever the reason that they want that total control. So it's in a lot of ways, you know, some of these police forces members are coming from military backgrounds and they've seen occupation in the real sense, and so they come from that and are not better trained by Columbus to do better work than what they do in occupation forces out in Iraq, Afghanistan, wherever else they've been trained to do their good police work, as they would say.
So in part you're suggesting what the stats indicate, the militarization of the police. A lot of this wave have done time in Afghanistan, Iraq, and other war zone, and they're bringing some of those tactics into particularly the inner city, because quite frankly, they wouldn't be tolerated in the suburbs like Upper Arlington.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's happening out there as well. I mean, the vets are happening, but yeah, the fear or the tenacity that they feel they have to take over a situation, to have total control of a situation, the resistance of the urban youth is much stronger than the suburban youth. They don't take stop and frisk and ID very well. They will reject that on a verbal level as well as an authoritarian level. They will run from a police officer because they think you're stupid if you get stopped by a police officer, because most of the time they should get away because they're not doing much. They're either just hanging out with their buddies or maybe doing some misdemeanors, but to get shot in the back for $10 seems a little contrary to what humans should be dealing with at this time in 2016.
But if youth ran in the suburbs, it's not likely, particularly if they had a 19-year-old companion who they could squeeze, that they would shoot him in the back.
No, that is definitely the case. That's definitely the case. They probably would not do that.
So you had a personal relation with Tyree. You knew him on a personal level. What can
yeah.
you tell us?
Yeah, I met him in 2008. I met his family. He was a young boy, that was very interested in doing recreation. And so I was working at a rec center over in Brentonnell area and got to know him about, and his interest was in doing gymnastics or tumbling. He would come in just tumbling like crazy. He got very much of interest in doing tumbling. And so I figured, you know, let's do some other sports. So we started doing some track. And then the big thing that got him really interested was ice hockey. So I was his ice hockey
ice
coach.
Ice hockey?
Yes.
How much interest was there in ice hockey? Usually a game not associated with Columbus or urban centers.
Yeah, yeah. Since Blue Jackets came into town, they've been really supportive of developing an urban reality. And so we've created a hockey club that has several hundred of youth that have gone through and are actually have gotten college scholarships for it. We introduced some kids that are fairly young that, you know, Tyree was a very athletic young man, but we get him on the ice. He was very timid in the first, but then he was very bold. He just would go out of control, couldn't stop himself, and it was just the smile that he'd always have coming off. I mean, it was ear to ear underneath that grill that is under the helmet. I mean, everyone that met him was totally enamored with him as soon as they met him, and because he always had a smile on his face and was totally into the sport. When I moved from that rec center, we kept him involved with hockey for about another 2 years, but his interest waned as my personal contact had waned as well. So
what was it like when you heard that he had been shot by the police?
I was out of the country. I got a call, text that same night, about a half hour after it happened, that Tyree, I said, Tyree who? I said, Tyree's been shot. I said, Tyree who? They said, Tyree King. And I was like, no, not really. No, that can't be. And then I got another text in about a half hour after that. So before it happened, you know, just before 8, at somewhere around 7:30, 8 o'clock, before 9 o'clock, I had two texts and a phone call that this had happened. And so I was out of the country, and so I started calling people, and a lot of the folks in the rec department have really been hit hard by this, because this young man, everyone really got enraptured with his energy. He had great energy. He definitely would run if he was in trouble. As soon as we started getting him in trouble, he'd run home. If we knew where he would, if ever got in trouble, we knew where he was. He was at home. And so I think in that night, he knew he did something, or he was part of something, and he might have took off running towards home. And so, I don't know all the details. And again, you know, the internal investigation is still going on. But there's, you know, the coronary reports are saying he was, you know, shot in the left temple, the left collarbone, and the left flank, going through the right of all those body parts, meaning that he was not facing a military or a police officer.
And he was running away.
Basically was running away.
And had his back turned.
And maybe was starting to, you know, take off and run. Yeah, he was running.
And again, there was a 19-year-old who didn't run.
No.
So I'm always wondering what goes through an officer's mind when it's clear, you're going to find out who this kid
is. Definitely.
And in most cases, time-honored tradition, the 19-year-old, because he's not a juvenile, will often suggest that it was the juvenile who will get lesser charges who is responsible for any wrongdoing.
We have that happening all the time, that the holder of the money, the holder of whatever, the weapon, is always the younger child, because the older person knows they're going to get more real time than the juvie. Yeah.
And you've suggested that this is coming out of a bigger social economic circumstance, one that literally may be described as war.
Yeah.
In parts of the inner city.
Yeah. I mean, across the nation, you have over 40,000 people getting killed by guns in a year. United Nations, by definition, say that an incident or events that cause 1,500 people to be dead in a year, you know, by violence, is called a war. Now, that's by definition a war. And so we're well above that. And these kids are walking streets by street by street and are facing very direct and violent, hostile situations in a lot of ways, where they have to come at you fairly strongly some, you know, a lot of folks don't understand the language that they hear from youth. A lot of that is the crust around a very soft heart, because they've had large trauma that has caused, in a lot of ways, mental health crises where you don't know how to deal with. Everybody talks about the sudden death syndrome for infants. I say sudden death syndrome is for every youth in this nation, because they have come to know a colleague, a brother, a sister, a cousin that has been there that one day, and then the next they're gone.
And our argument historically at the Free Press is a lot of this is linked to the hollowing out of the country, loss of industrial jobs, mm-hmm. loss of tax bases. You know, if over a 30-year population in Columbus is living in poverty. And in today's New York Times, I saw an article, death at birth, death of the mother mm-hmm. during childbirth is now higher in the U.S. than it is in Iran.
Yeah.
So these countries we think are more backward. And in this area, within walking distance, if we walked a few blocks, you would be in a zip code where your chances of dying at birth are two times as high than if you were in a suburb.
Yeah.
And none of that seems to be being dealt with.
Yeah, there's organizations that are coming together. A lot of corporations are starting to come together about the infant mortality issues. But yeah, you're talking about 43205, 43206, 43207
exactly.
that are as bad, if not worse, than third world countries with infant mortality. And I happen to work in those districts, those zones. And we've been working for the last 5 years creating community-based response on that particular issue. City leadership has been coming to those meetings and starting to come with some money and some policy. But when you're living in a, and this is, you mentioned a little bit about the poverty level and unemployment. When you start talking about that, and in the aggregate, you know, we're looking pretty good, you know, for historical purposes. We're what, 4 or 5% unemployed? You know, that's not depression era. But you go into some of these neighborhoods and you have youth that are like 70, 80, 90% unemployed and will never get jobs because they've either gotten a misdemeanor for some kind of drug use mm-hmm. or some kind of misdemeanor for some petty crime, and they will never get a job because of the returning citizen phenomenon that we're starting to work on, of how to either ban the box on these applications for employment or to reexamine who's hiring and why they limit people that they hire.
Is racism at work here? I mean, one of the targets of the original war on drugs from Richard Nixon in 1971 was the Black Power or remnants of the civil rights movement. Last week, the New York Times said in New York, you're 11 times more likely to be stopped and arrested for simple drug possession if you're black mm-hmm. than if you're white, even though whites have a higher rate of illegal drug use. So are we talking about racism as a factor?
Yeah. I mean, Martin Luther King, you know, in the 60s mentioned the triplets of oppression. Nothing has changed. You got militarism, you got racism, and you got the classism, and nothing has changed. Maybe more definition and more potential of resolving, possibly. Maybe there's more community engagement that we could talk about that could possibly change things. But when you start talking about poverty, such a long, deep-seated reality, and the effect that caste system or racism has on that system of poverty, this system, this society is based on inequity. It is based on insecurity. That's how it rewards itself. The better it is, the more insecure some sections are, because you can make more money, more inequitable gaps happen because of that. And this society is ripe for what we're living through right now. I mean, we're in a lot of ways, were the roaring 20s all over again. And that explosion will happen very soon.
You're listening to 98.3 WCRS, also at 102.1, and our sister station, WGRN 94.1. I'm here with Mark Stansberry from the Community Organizing Center, and we're talking about the death of Tyree King, not only on an individual level, since Mark Stansberry knew him personally, but also the larger implications. Do you have any specific memories of Tyree, you know, that are burned into your mind now that he has passed?
Well, I know you're originally from Michigan, so I'll give you a Detroit, Michigan memory. We went up for a hockey tournament up there, the Mini Mites and Mites. He was a mite by that time. That's a 6- and 7-year-old hockey team. He was up there to play hockey. I was helping chaperone the teams, and he was in my room. And so the night that we were up there for 2 nights, the night that he was to go to bed, he was so excited. He was jumping around, doing flips on the bed. You know, the hotel bed is just totally destroyed. But it was fun. It was fun because, you know, he's 30 pounds. He was, like, very small. Always has been very small and wasn't ever a threatening person.
The corner said when he was 5'1 and 100 pounds or less.
Yeah, he was never a big person. I mean, very athletic. But he was so homesick in a way that he hadn't been away from his grandmother. He lives with his grandmother and mother and two sisters at that point. And he hadn't been away from home, so he got fairly homesick. So he ended up sleeping with me in the bed. So those 2 nights, you know, it's the first time I've ever slept in bed with some child that's been shot by police. So it sort of really was hitting close to me when I heard that, you know, I've had pretty total closeness with that young boy that this one puts a little bit more twist on me. I've had young people killed by fellow street folks. I've had youth arrested and shot by police, but I've never had one that I knew this closely shot by the police. So I really, it's caused me to feel like we need to respond to this, and I'm very grateful that the community has used Tyree King's incident as a potential for addressing some of these concerns that you're starting to ask about. You know, the poverty, the police training, police potential of redesigning how community policing is done. You know, we've the Free Press for years has talked about, you know, doing altering how policing has been conducted in Columbus, Ohio, and with your campaign, hopefully the county will also join in some of that conversation.
And again, a lot of these things here with the Community Organizing Center, the concept of community policing, and you may know it as de-escalation, but training the police as peace officers instead of law enforcement officers to not always go in with an assumption, real but usually imagine, that some crime has been committed or these inner city youth are doing something illegal, but instead try to de-escalate situations. And also something, you know, we've talked about over the years, you're very familiar with, the notion of community policing force coming from the community themselves,
right,
offering incentives. Because, you know, you mentioned earlier occupying army. As we think about that, occupying army, a lot of these people, it's not that they're from the suburbs, they're from surrounding rural counties. They're not living in Franklin County. And that really, the government itself, with the Kerner Report and some of the other reports from the 60s, said that was the very cause of the urban riots in the 1960s.
Yeah. It's the attitude, the life experience that a police officer comes through. You can't really you can't train that out of them totally, but you can encourage a larger proportion of the force to be, you know, native sons, native daughters of the communities that they are going to police, and to better understand, well, little Josie, yeah, he goes and he talks crazy. He's going to be cussing at you, but he's not really going to do much. You know,
or Tyree was a runner.
Tyree's a runner. He would have known that because
you can pick him up.
Yeah.
He's just had his mom and Graham's mom.
Yeah, he just got to go over and get him at his house, and Brandon knew where he was. So yeah, those kind of things that, and not to feel threatened when someone doesn't actually totally respond to your authority. So you aren't an authority figure. Remember, some of these kids are not in families that have male dominance in it. It's not what they reject it in a lot of ways too. They will resist it in a lot of ways because that they have learned over the years that rent a dad or weekend dads, you know, come in. They'll do some strong authoritative messaging, but then they're gone. So, you know, you hear people say things, but you know that's only going to be a temporary thing, so, you know, I don't really have to listen to that. So they've come to understand that their resistance and their survival is based on trying to be smarter and faster than the next. Because, you know, the old adage is when you two people are chased from by a lion, you only have to be faster than that other person, not the lion.
All right, I'm speaking with Mark Stansberry of the Community Organizing Center here in Columbus, who not only knew Tyree, but coached him, spent time with him, and had a personal relationship with him. What about the idea we've been pushing at the Free Press is that the police ought to know the Constitution? A lot of those programs left over as an aftermath of the riots in 1970, LEAP grants. First course I ever taught, I taught police political ideology, so they wouldn't randomly beat everyone who was a liberal and to the left. These were law enforcement action program grants. Mm-hmm. Those actual grants to send police to college, to teach them sociology, anthropology, political science, constitutional law. But all of that has vanished. And the question is, you know, if you've got a militarized police, and, you know, are they protecting and serving, and how can we do better in that area?
The old protection and serving. I always like them when they're serving, not protecting. So it's the training is woefully short. You may get EEO training from an officer, maybe 8 hours, and then they're done. You know, for 2, 3, 4 years. Do they want to be off the street trained all the time? Perhaps that's what we need to do. We need to get more police officers. Rotating a third of them off the streets for a year, and having them go through colleges of constitutional rights and understanding defendant rights and the Miranda and all the other stuff. They know these things. They know them. But you know the training that they have lethal force capability, and that's what they know.
And shooting for center mass, shooting the kill.
That's right.
A lot of young kids that I've met on the campaign trail kept asking, why they have to shoot him to kill him? Why couldn't they shoot his legs? Mm-hmm. And I have to explain, they're actually trained to shoot to kill, even if you're 13 years old and 5'1", 100 pounds.
Yeah, that's the shooting range mentality. If you've ever seen a silhouette, they're going for the center core body. And, you know, for a person that's going to be shooting, you'd rather hit something than have those bullets go astray. I mean, to look at it that way, you could see why they do it, but why do they have to get to the shoot first and ask questions later, which Columbus Police has been known for years?
I mean, and I in some cases, shoot up whole neighborhoods. I don't know, 140 or more bullets up in Clintonville. Henry Green, I mean, shot him 7 times, but also shot up the neighborhood, including a house across the street with a baby inside.
They've made many mistakes. They've busted SWATs, broken into many houses I know that were not the houses they were supposed to go to, and then they you know, for a, oops, I'm sorry, not even that. Sorry for your luck is the attitude that goes forward. The SWAT, the militarization, the whole summer ACE program, which was that active criminal enforcement that used to be around, now they call it Summer Force Protection, or whatever they call the name.
Summer Safety Initiative.
Safety Initiative, yeah.
Mark, as you know, is undercover cops, overwhelmingly white, in unmarked cars. And they used to be called, on the street, the Jump Out Boys.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, here's two white guys in a car with money all over and what looks like some drugs. And they've got their, acting like they're stoned, and they got their gun already drawn, so if somebody opens the door to see what's up, somebody's going to get shot. Yeah. Dante Miller, Edgar Hayes, or Obie Shepherd on a bike. And these are in the 5 neighborhoods that have the highest rate of crime.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, are they actually doing, you know, acting as peace officers, or are they in fact causing and escalating violence? In the case of Henry Green, it was allowed to openly carry a gun. You know, it happens all the time in Appalachia. But, you know, two white guys show up with guns drawn on you. How are you going to respond?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the whole open container, or the open
carry,
the open carry, concealed weapon type laws that are coming through, stand your ground, whatever, however you want to define those, it's definitely for a certain set of personhood that is.
And if you go to YouTube, you can see cops in rural areas coming up on drunk open carry guys who are out of control, and they don't shoot them.
Yeah.
It's like Andy of Mayberry policing, and I consider Andy of Mayberry, although mythical, the greatest law enforcement officer in the world. All his practice, if we adopted those, we'd be a much greater society.
Yeah.
Lock yourself in when you're drunk, when you sober up.
Yeah.
Let yourself out.
That's right. Otis, wasn't it? Otis?
No charge. And there was one where he talked about this. He'd show up in the hillbilly and shoot his, be drunk. They actually called him the hillbilly. It's not my you know, would shoot, and Andy would say, "Well, he's just drunk. He'll calm down. I'll talk to him."
Yeah.
We got 1 minute. Anything last to say about Tyree King's shooting?
Yeah, Tyree was a beautiful person. He was a teenager that probably made some mistakes in his decision making, but don't we all? How do we learn and make something good come out of this tragic event? Officer Mason and his family, I'm sure, are struggling through what he always tends to turn towards shooting. That's been his
4 of them, at least.
Yeah, his operation. That's been his training. That's been his orientation. Perhaps, you know, to continue in policing may not be where he needs to be, but perhaps if he is going to continue that we need to understand that the police force in Columbus needs to do better at what it's doing.
Yeah, well, I hope he gets a nice desk job. I believe in one and done. For your own good, you kill another human being. That's it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mark. This is Dr. Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news.
Thanks, Bob.